The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 67 for August, well, today. August 28th, 2006. I am almost certain of it that that is what today is. How are you, John?
That was a good bob and weave there. I'm very impressed.
Did you like that?
Good save.
Yeah.
Good save.
Well, I got a lot to do over here. There's a lot of buttons to push and that sort of thing. And every now and then I can't catch my eye on what it is that I need to catch. So, you know, We improvise. That's that whole rock and roll thing. So we are back with the Geek Gab here, and we've got a couple of things to talk about. I'm going to be brutally honest. I've been in a allergy-induced fog all day, and my back's killing me, so we'll see how this goes. But we have things. We actually have even more on the DVD ripping conversation to wrap up some great answers about a couple of the things we talked about last week, and then I have moved a lot further down the path with my email management saga. And so many of you have emailed me asking, saying, well, you know, I was following along on your blog and nothing has happened. You need to tell me what's going on. We will tell you what's going on, and I'll tell you what's going on too, John. And
have you reached nirvana?
I might be, yes, approaching nirvana. I don't know that nirvana can ever be reached. It's like, you know, you're gradually approaching this thing that's never really there. But let's just talk about it because we're right here. So, as you know, I was using Mailsmith and had all my mail organized into folders, and we talked about that whole thing. And I started considering mail. Now, in tandem to that, for about the last year, I've been a Trio 650 user, and that's my cell phone, and I get my email to the phone. And my email takes an interesting path. It goes to Gmail, and it comes into our server. I funnel it through Gmail simply because Gmail has great online spam filtering, and it's just easy. You know, it's the easy button. So it filters through Gmail. And then comes back to our server and sits in a little IMAP box. Now, IMAP is a mail standard, a mail protocol standard. It allows a great deal, actually, of interaction between the client and the server, much better than POP. And I've got a program called Chatter Email on my Trio that interfaces with this IMAP server. So all the mail is actually stored on the server, and then it's just mirrored on my Trio. And I had had this account that I set up just for the Trio, and I started thinking, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm managing two, if not three, inboxes, because I've got the inbox on my desk and the inbox on my Trio, and then sometimes I even go into the Gmail thing and manage mail from there. And I started thinking, wait a minute. You know, this whole thing, as I detached myself from this whole, you know, what should I do about managing my email on my desktop, I started thinking, why do I want to manage my email on my desktop? I've already got a perfectly good copy of my email out on the server. It archives things, and it's in a standard protocol or accessible via a standard protocol. It's on my server. It's not mine. It's Backbeat Media's, but it's a server that you know, I have a fair amount of control over. So why not leverage that and have, you know, the unified inbox, the same inbox on my Trio that I have on my desktop at the office, and the same at home, right? I mean, this is approaching nirvana, at least.
That's what it's for.
That's what it's for, right? And it's you're exactly right. That's what IMAP is for.
If you have access to it, alas. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as I know, I haven't checked lately, but last I checked, you know, Opt Online here does only supports POP. Regular POP, not even, you know, APOP or any of the other
IMAP
interesting versions or SSL or anything like that. That would be another option.
Right.
IMAP, is something that I guess, well, because you run the server,
right?
You get to set it up. I don't know. I like to hear from people how prevalent it is. I mean, does your provider offer it?
Or? Nope. Comcast is the provider that we have here in New Hampshire, and no, it does not. They do not offer IMAP. So
it's because you are setting up the server, but it's the right way to do it because the IMAP protocol does better management.
It's great. Yeah.
Whereas POP, I guess POP always pulls it off and deletes it.
Well, or... it pulls it off. There's no direct interface. It's a client pull kind of thing. There's no interaction. You can't file things on the server with POP. You can't create mailboxes. I mean, there are implementations that simulate that and get close to it, but IMAP does it for real. But I have noticed, I've looked on the server, you know, and this is a pretty high-powered server, the mail server that we run for all of TMO and all of Backbeat and everything. And IMAP actually beats on it. Even with just me doing this, it's a fairly resource-intensive thing, especially if I'm, pulling from a mailbox that's got, 10,000 messages in it or something. So that's probably why, your cable provider and most ISPs don't offer it. But more are, I believe. And really, it's the way to go. So really, today was the first day that I tried this. Now, I'm using Apple's Mail app as an IMAP client. Mailsmith does not do it. I did think about using Thunderbird, and we'll talk about that. Somebody actually asked about Thunderbird. But right now I'm using Apple's Mail app simply because there are so many add-ons for it. There's a lot of third-party support available for it. All the little tweaks that you want to do are there. All the spam filters that you might want to use, everything's built for Mail app. Not to mention that .Mac actually allows you to synchronize your rules and filters among multiple machines, which for me actually works out fairly well too. So I'm using Mail app, and I'm using a couple of add-ons, both from the same guy, and one of them is, I think it's InDev is the name of the company that makes them. One is called Mail Tags. And that allows you to tag your mail so that you can just store it all in one folder, but add some keywords to it, if you will. But really the key for me is Mail Act On, which is also from these folks. And it allows you to do a lot of applying rules to mail with single keystrokes. So I don't have to go to the mouse to file things. I can do it all with Mail Act On, and I can even apply keywords with it because it's all integrated there. It seems so far so good. We'll have to see. I did pull my 180,000 messages from Mail app into from Mailsmith into Mail app. Exporting them with out of Mailsmith was an interesting story. I complained last week that I wasn't able to do it in a hierarchy. Well, I modified the bare bones provided Apple script and actually made it create a hierarchy. And I'll link to that too if anybody wants it. It's out there on my blog, and I think Jeff even linked to it from TMO today. So hopefully anyone that's searching for it a year from now will actually be able to find it. So I got that out and I pulled it in. It took an hour to get it out of Mailsmith. It took about 20 hours to import it into Mail. But now it's there. It doesn't seem to be slow, but I'm not filing into it. I've just got it there as a resource. And I didn't move that to the IMAP server. At this point, there's no reason to. So so that's where I am, and we'll see how it goes. But that's the... That's the as close to Nirvana as I can envision, and for me it might work out really well. We'll just have to see.
So okay, so were these? I'm curious. Were these mbox files, and they needed to be modified a bit or tweaked a little bit, or?
Well, Mailsmith stores its mail in its own little package,
right.
And so the Mailsmith when you choose export mail, you're just exporting one mailbox at a time. Now. That with 1,400 mailboxes, that was not an option, right? But Barebones provides an Apple script, and Mailsmith is extremely Apple scriptable. So they provide an Apple script that would go through the hierarchy and just export everything out, but it would be all the mailboxes in one folder, all at the same level. And of course, I wanted to preserve the hierarchy, so I wrote a script that did that. Or I modified their script to do that. And posted it to my blog. Yeah, it's actually the first real... I've tinkered with Apple script before, but it was the first time I really dug into it. It's not a bad language. It kind of reminds me of other scripting languages like FileMaker, although it's certainly more flexible than that. There are walls that you will hit with AppleScript, and when you hit them, that's it. There's no climbing over them. You can sometimes try to go around them, maybe, but that's about as good as it gets. So,
or try Automator.
Yeah, although Automator is more limited than AppleScript. It's easier to interface with, but you're not actually writing. I mean, AppleScript is a programming language. I mean, you're actually writing statements and loops, and you can assign variables and all of that stuff. So I posted the script to my blog. You can actually read right through it. It's It's fairly easy to read through. At least, I think so. I commented it well.
Nice. One more question on the Mail app.
Yeah.
How do you add features? Is it within the Mail environment, or do you download little scripts or
plugins? Yeah, there are plugins. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All these things appear in, at least the two that I've installed, appear in the preferences as additional panes. So you install them, you restart the Mail app, and then magically they're there. So it's fully integrated into Mail.
Cool.
So far, so good. Like I said, we'll see how it goes, and I'll certainly report back. But that's where we're at with it. So hopefully I've found something that's going to work for me long term, because I hate bouncing stuff around. It's a time waster. Mm-hmm. And you know, I wanted to tell you, John, we have a sponsor this week for tonight's episode, Belight Software. The folks that make Business Card Composer, Disc Cover, Image Tricks, and more Mac software are sponsoring the show tonight. They actually sent me a copy of Business Card Composer to play with. They recently updated it to version 4.0. This thing is really cool. And I'd say that without being prompted to. I looked at it. Well, I mean, they're paying for the ad, but I wouldn't say it was cool if I didn't think it was. I launched this thing. Man, it is easy to create a very slick looking business card. And it pulls from address book, right? So if I needed to create business cards for all of us here at TMO, I could, you know, easily pull all the information in. I don't have to type it all in. All these templates and formats, of course, you can add your own graphics in, but I think there's over 20,000 images built into the thing, and probably, I don't know, what do they say here? 600 different card designs, all different layouts and ideas that, of course, you can tweak. But it really amazing. And when you go to print, it's got all the Avery labels built into it. So you can just go buy stuff from the store. And it's not just Avery. There's just about every brand. I looked in the list. There were brands I'd never heard of. So you can, you know, coordinate all that stuff. Pulls in your stuff from iPhoto. Killer. Business Card Composer from Belight Software at belightsoft.com.
Great. That's awesome, because I was going to talk to you about new business cards. You know,
excellent.
That promotion.
Did you get a promotion, John?
You didn't get the memo?
I think we filed that in the circular file, didn't we? Yeah, I must have lost the memo while I was migrating my email back and forth. So next quarter, yeah. You know, next quarter when it comes around, I'm sure I'll see it then. All right, well, let's move on to DVD ripping here and see what Richard has to say.
Whoa.
What's that?
Richard,
yeah. Because I asked about something, and Richard...
He's nuts.
He is nuts. That's right.
Good morning, John and Dave. Richard from Raleigh, North Carolina, calling. You recently answered my question about the use of VPN for the eyesight while I travel. Thank you for your suggestions.
You bet.
I will try them all to get this working for me. In your Mac Geek Gab show 66, you had the discussion or ongoing discussion of the DVD ripping exercises. Try just about all of the ones that you have discussed. In your comment, I believe it was John was saying that he wished there was a way of throwing 2 500-gigabyte hard drives down and simply watch the movies he wanted to watch.
That was
I'm
me.
I'm currently working on trying to get that system put together and actually have it working at this point, but it's a little bit kludgy. I have purchased 2 500-gigabyte mini stacks that I've put under a new Mac Mini Dual, and I'm using Media Central for the replacement of Front Row to view the shows. The shows I'm getting onto the hard drive by using Handbrake and setting the resolution that I want to store it, and then I'm storing all of those movies into directory, which can be used by either iTunes, which lets me to share those throughout the house, or putting the alias into a movie directory that the Media Central can play. I've backed up the system also using my Sony Klee UX50 using the Bluetooth or the 802.11.
Wow.
You can use either. And a program called Sailing Clicker, which allows me to use it as a remote control for the device. Additionally, I went ahead and added in the ITV 250, which has allowed me to make it into almost a full entertainment system.
Wow.
So I can listen to music, I can watch TV, or I can watch movie on demand, basically turning a Mac Mini into a TiVo. I think that's a good definition of geeky, but I'll let you figure it out. My email address.
Oh, wow. That's, I don't know what to say after that. I mean, that's,
I think
that's all.
The next,
you know what it is? There it is.
The next party.
Thanks,
is
folks.
His place.
We're out of, no, we're not out of here. I don't know how to top that. That's awesome.
That's, the next party is at his place. We just have to.
Now, have you taken a look at this app that he referred to called Media Central from Equinox? This thing looks cool.
Just starting to peek at it. It looks like super front. It's like front row
on rails. Yeah, that's
right. But it wants to be when it grows up.
Right. That's right. Yes. And it probably will. I think you're right. I think eventually it will get there. Front row will. But this is cool. And it looks like, what, $30 or something to get a copy of this thing. Definitely worth checking out if you're heading down this path. And you're right. You know, I said it wasn't available. It is available. You can build it yourself and do it. Certainly. You've proven that. And you can do it well. What my rant was that there is no box. You and I can do this. The geekier amongst us can do it. The less geeky amongst us can listen to what Richard has talked about here and piece this together. But the guy that's got 500 movie DVDs in his library or whatever, that's not really a computer geek, but he's a connoisseur of a movie connoisseur. He's not going to necessarily want to head down the path of A, building this, and B, maintaining it. He wants to buy a box, right? Circuit City. 10 minutes later, he's back in the car with this box. He brings home, bam, plugs it in, and it does all of the stuff that Richard just described. That's not available because the movie companies have thwarted. They have. This stuff has been built, right? I mean, clearly something like this would sell. The movie companies have stopped it from happening so that they can maintain their control over the industry. It's a short-sighted thing, but they're making a ton of money, so it's worth it to them. I mean, it's just capitalism.
We must rise up, brother.
Well, yeah, good luck. We just wait for these guys to die off. It'll be fine.
Yeah, I guess just it's evolution. Well,
it is.
In a sense,
yeah. Along these same lines, Aaron writes in and says he's a best man at a wedding, and instead of another standard speech, he wants to make a short film with a collection of movie clips put together with a voiceover. He thinks he can do it with iMovie. The trouble is, how do I get DVDs I legally bought imported into iMovie? Now, this is where it gets, and I'm no lawyer. I know John, of course, is about to be voted up nominated for the Supreme Court, I think, right, John? I think that's your next gig. That's that promotion you talked about. But I'm certainly no lawyer. So if you have any legal questions, John will field all those for you. But in theory, it sounds reasonable that you could pull this stuff into iMovie and build what you're talking about and play it for, your group of friends. But I don't know. I think that might head down the path of it being a quote unquote public broadcast, right? And then at that point, you're taking copyrighted material and broadcasting it. Now, is there any difference between gathering all your friends together and having them watch, Mad Max on your HD TV and this? No, I don't think so. But the movie industry has made it very difficult to pull this stuff off. However, like Richard said, and like we've said before, Handbrake is one piece of software that will pull these DVDs and import them into iMovie. And I believe Handbrake will actually let you pick which sections you want to pull in, so you're not forced to rip the whole thing. And then, of course, you can also try Mac the Ripper. That'll create VOB files, which are MPEG 2 files. And I believe if you get the QuickTime component, I think iMovie will read them. Yeah.
We talked about that. Yes, there's an MPEG 2 reader optional component.
That's right.
Which will read VOB files.
That's right.
Unprotected, of course.
That's right. 206-666-GEEK is the number that you can can dial into.
I'm going to go and call.
And you know, I realize today, looking at my cell phone for a year now, we've been saying 206-666-GEEK. And on my Trio, I have no letters for the phone numbers. So I'll tell you, it's 206-666-4335, just in case you have a phone without numbers.
Is that a really small phone? It's so small that it can't fit the letters on?
No, but it's like the numbers are on the keypad of the... It's weird. Hmm. Anyway, you can see a picture online. It's much easier than me trying to sit here and explain it.
So. Next.
Next, huh? Where are we going next? I guess we go to Dave.
Hey, Dave and John. Dave Hassel here from the UK. Just following up about that question somebody had with Azurius. I think you'll find that if you actually go and find the preferences, just the text file, you can actually edit the window location, the X and Y coordinates, which means that you can then move the window back into some sensible desk space that is actually visible on a single monitor. Also, just another quick reply to your VPN question. If you're on the same network, you can actually change the size of the subnet and change it from 255.255.255.0 to maybe 255.255.255.252 or some other appropriate multiple, and maybe get the network to work that way if the two sets of IP ranges differ within inside that Class C network. Okay, really enjoyed the show. Very, very good for I listened in my car, but I waited until I got to work until I made the phone call. Okay.
Awesome.
Enjoy it. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Okay, so there were two things there. One was his suggestion for editing the... These were two very geeky suggestions, high on the geek meter. So if you have an app that whose windows are off the screen, like we discussed last week with that gentleman with Azurius, you can go edit the preference file and perhaps find where that is and try and move it around. That's
I looked.
Yeah. Good luck.
I couldn't find it.
Yeah. And then his comment about the IP range, again, very, very geeky. We're talking about connecting, if you're on a subnet at a hotel, and you've got the same subnet at home, if your ranges just so happen to be different enough, meaning, say, at home your IP addresses end in .10, and at the hotel they're ending in, you know, .200, then yes, you can change your subnet mask and limit that down to have it, to force it to go to the router to get to something outside. Now, even doing that, though, the router may force it back in because the router says, no, I know where this is, but who knows? Perhaps that would be enough to do it.
My thought would be DHCP would pretty much take care of setting the subnet properly.
You'd have to do DHCP manually. That's right. Or edit the routes after the fact, or edit the IP configuration after the fact. And yeah, that gets very very geeky. There is another not quite so geeky solution for the window thing that I didn't know about.
Hey guys, I'm calling in reference to the gentleman who is having an issue with his application window being open on a second window or a second monitor, and then when he went to the single monitor, he couldn't access that application. Your suggestion was one that I've never tried, but I had run into a similar issue, and what I had done to resolve the issue, or at least this is the way I remember it, I went to the monitor preference pane and system preferences and gathered windows and oh my goodness, what was that? And that seemed to pull all the application windows into the single center window. I usually have three monitors at home, but sometimes I've noticed when I use my laptop and I switch from one to two that, you know, occasionally that's what I've done in the past. I haven't had that issue, though, in a very long time. Hope that helps.
That's just pure genius, because clearly that should work just fine. So did you see that out there? If you go into your monitors prefs, John, or display preferences, I guess, if you go to system preferences,
I don't.
Displays.
I don't, because
you only have one screen.
I don't think I have the.
Oh yeah, that.
Which is why
not.
I was scratching my head when I heard this. And I'm like, but then I searched online and I found references to the feature. But yeah, I guess it consolidates everything on a single display.
Yeah, so but that's not going to fix the problem if you are. I mean, the issue is if you're usually on two displays and then are only on one and launch an app that goes off to the side, well, the feature's not going to be there, I don't think. I'll have to experiment with that.
Or if you just go to the... If you got a monitor in the menu bar, if you just go to... Or actually, the preference, if you just say detect displays, I think that would
Yeah, one other person actually had
a shape.
Had an interesting thing. They said to try mirroring the displays, but again, that requires two screens to be attached. So before that option becomes available. So yeah, I'm not sure that's the answer.
No, it's also a Java application, which I did notice.
What's this?
Or at least I thought it was. Yeah, it is. Okay. The frog. The thing with the frog.
Right.
Azurius. No, it's run on Java, so I think it's doing a different Azurius. That's his name.
Yes.
But no, that is running under Java at some level, though I don't know if it's... Okay, no, I see SWT.
Running under Java, but it's fairly Mac... you wouldn't know that it was running under Java unless you went and looked. It inherits all of the normal interface stuff. So, yeah, I think going to the window menu and choosing Zoom would probably would still work. Yeah, I think that's the trick.
It looks a little different, though. But anyways, I don't think it's Java. I was just speculating. It's a nice client, though.
Yeah,
you need to do that sort of thing.
So, how are your PowerBook batteries there, John?
I'm getting new ones.
Yeah.
I punched in my serial number, which one way to do that for.
Yep.
Those who want to get it quickly, you go to About This Mac, and it'll show you the version of the OS you're running. If you click once on that, it'll tell you the build of the OS. Mine is HA135. You click again, you get the serial number of the machine.
Right.
But
that doesn't give you the serial number of your battery.
You can't copy that.
You cannot copy that.
No.
That's right.
And oh, how do you get that? As far as I know, you gotta
take the battery out. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. As far as I know, it doesn't tell your Mac its
serial
number.
I thought X Battery would, but I don't think it does. X Battery is a nice utility.
It is. Yeah. You've got two of these recalled batteries. Actually, Lisa's got one in the PowerBook that she uses here, and I imagine you have yours on order just like we do here.
4 to 6 weeks. Confirm email.
Yeah. Did you take your batteries out and stack them off to the side, and you're just running the laptop off the power adapter like they suggested?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
How about you?
No way. Lisa forbid me to do any such thing to her laptop. And trust me, I know where the boundaries are, and that's the key to a successful marriage is. You know, knowing when that line is not to be crossed. Much better to blow up the house with a faulty battery than it is to upset the wife in that regard.
So, I'm hoping for a large cash settlement.
If your house explodes, I think the fact that you've ordered the battery shows now that you know that this thing's dangerous. I'm not so sure that cash settlement's going to be coming your way anytime soon. I wouldn't start spending that money until you get it.
The machines, it's funny. Now you've, like on your MacBook, you've gone through a couple of firmware updates that kind of fiddle with the fans and stuff like that.
Yeah, at least one, if not two. I think there were two actually. So.
Yeah, I've had hot Macs, not hot batteries though. Like especially the early PowerBook G4s did get quite warm, not almost burned, but pretty close.
Huh. Yeah, the MacBook still gets hot. I don't know that there's anything we can do about that. So, I guess that's that. I'm looking at the list here, and you know, we're gonna start heading out of this thing here. But I did want to talk about one thing. This podcast, this show, you know.
Oh, I thought you meant the other thing.
It's a little bit of rock and roll here. Is there something I'm missing here? I don't think so. You know, this week and this week only, if you're someone who hasn't yet subscribed to the feed and you're just downloading the MP3 or the AAC directly from the website or whatever, if you haven't subscribed to the feed this week, we're actually offering a promotion. You can subscribe for free for life. So make sure you go out and do that. Tell all your friends that you can do that. Right, John?
I'm going to go tell them.
Okay, good.
Bye.
Now, you know me fairly well, John. Most of the listeners probably don't, just because of the nature of this whole relationship that we have here. But
And that program you're a part of.
That's right. Yeah, witness protection and all that. I still have to wear sunglasses when I go outside during the day and that hat that they gave me, but that's okay. You know that I don't really have, though I enjoy playing games, I rarely play games because I simply don't have time for them. But I'm also a big...
Oh, I know where this is going.
Yes, you probably do. I'm also a big fan of analyzing things from a social and psychological perspective, just to see how things are. I'm not someone that, you know, locks people in the attic for years and tortures them or anything.
Just days.
What's that? Just hours, maybe. But, you know, I always like to see the outcome of different little things like that. So, about a week ago, my brother, maybe a week and a half ago, my brother starts telling me about this thing, this online game where you create a country, and it's very, the time that you can spend on this thing is very, very minimal. It's maybe 10 minutes a day, if that, usually even less. And it's called nationstates.net is the website. It's free. You can go and play, set up a country. And the cool thing is every day you get one or two issues that you have to decide what to do with your little land. And it's been a whole lot of fun. It's a nice little diversion. I check it at night or in the morning and you just see what's going on with the little country. So we even created a group called Geeks Unite, or I guess they call it a region. It's called Geeks Unite. And if you care to play in our region, you're more than welcome to do it. It's not really as though you're competing against each other. It's just more for fun. It's that's just kind of the way it goes. Very interesting. There's a whole backstory that I'll leave to you to go read. There's actually a great Wikipedia entry that sort of explains the whole thing. But well worth checking out if you're into that sort of thing. Very fun, and come say hi. We're in the Geeks Unite group, so on nationstates.net. Have you created a country yet, John?
No.
Oh, you should. It really is fun. You know, I think I banned cars the other day and made organ harvesting compulsory. So that's...
I'm still torn between being a, you know, ruthless tyrant or a, you know, kind of peace-loving hippie state. I don't know which extreme I want.
Well, and that's the beauty of this game. Yeah. Don't try to do both, though. I found that pretty much sends
the state.
Yeah, it sends the economy into the toilet. So I had to regain control and resume ruling with an iron fist, because these people don't know what's good for them. I know so much better for them.
It's
than,
just like
than
our
they
government.
Do. That's right. In about a month, John and I are heading out to Ontario, California, for Portable Media Expo. So if you're heading out there, come say hi. And Ricky Spiro from our TMO's other podcast, the Weekly Roundup, he is also heading out there. So come check that out. About a week and a half after that is a trade show that TMO has long been a media sponsor of called the Mac Networkers Retreat. It's now an IDG show, but we were media sponsors long before then. For years, and we may actually try to get it. It's a conference all about networking, essentially, networking on the Mac. So infrastructure and protocols and all that cool stuff that you need to deal with. Basically, all the stuff we talk about here it's a weekend long thing where you just get together and talk about this stuff, and there's conferences and that sort of thing. Clearly, I don't know enough about it to talk about it, which is a shame because we've been media sponsors for so long. So I'm going to try and get Paul Kent to do a quick little interview with us and tell us more about what this is. And if we can, we'll publish that for our next week's show since it's Labor Day here, and we might wind up taking the weekend off. So that's that. You've downloaded this from Cashfly Hosting. You can advertise through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. I do want to thank Beelight Software again for being our sponsor of today's show. And I think that's it. I don't have anything else. Do you got anything else, John?
That's it. I'm finished.
206-666.
Geek.
There it is.
Vote.
Vote. That's right. Make sure you vote. And fill out those iTunes comments. And come say hi on nationstates.net. You got to figure out who I am. It shouldn't be that hard. Or maybe it is. But come say hi anyway. I'm not the UN delegate.
Does that mean we can park wherever we want?
I think so.
Made up.